Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts?
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who.
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not.
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcasts. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships,
and so much more.
Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
All right, now, thank you for tuning into the GSMC MMA podcast. I am your host, Tate, and it is a great pleasure to introduce my co-host, who I haven't seen in a long time. He's been gone for about 6 months. Mr. Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. What's up, America?
Now, Will, where have you been?
Oh, man. Where do
Will has been a very busy boy the last 6 months.
I have been to 8 countries. I traveled to Southeast Asia, so I did a backpacking trip from Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, Singapore, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Korea. I went there as well.
Now, you went and you backpacked. When I hear backpack, it always throws me off when people talk about backpacking through Europe. But I've never heard of anyone actually backpacking through Asia. So I thought that was like the coolest thing ever.
It was the coolest thing that I've ever done in my entire life.
Craziest thing you've done while you're there?
Craziest thing you can ever do in Southeast Asia is ride a bike. Just getting anywhere and getting on public, or not even public transport, just getting on a moped and riding around and just seeing. First of all, there's a lane change and you have to drive the opposite way. Second of all the traffic rules that you understand in Western world, they are totally out the window.
Craziest thing you ate?
Craziest thing I ate?
American. Thinking as in our audience is pretty much all U.S.
Bugs. All types of bugs. Those fat bugs. A really big wormy bug. It's called a... They have a different name for it, but it's...
Because
like
bugs are very common to eat in Southeast Asia, right?
Yeah, and they're actually pretty good for you because they're packed with protein. But it's like this really fat milkworm, and it's just so juicy and wriggly.
Wait a minute, dude. You just said, oh, it's this really fat milkworm. And that is not like, hey, dude, it's a sandwich called a Whopper. You know what I mean? It's this really fat milkworm.
Oh, it's so good because they feed it peanuts and different things, so it takes on the flavor that it is. It's just that the texture you gotta get used to, but you dip it in this soy sauce chili sauce, so it's really nice and juicy, and it takes on the flavor of that.
I'm always willing to try anything. So the one thing, I've never tried bugs. I have tried bugs, like, let's see, that's like the scorpions, I've tried that before. And I've tried ants, but I've never tried a milk bug.
And it's different when you eat a dead one that's fried versus an alive one. That one gets a little bit weird because it's still alive until you bite it. And when you bite it, it's still alive.
Okay. Speaking of alive, let's talk about that UFC 227 card.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Will's first time like back in the States, and he gets a fantastic card. Since we've gotten a little off topic, today we're going to be covering that UFC 227 card. We're also going to talk about the UFC 25th anniversary announcement, in which they made some very interesting announcements for fights. We got Conor McGregor coming back, and he's going to be fighting Khabib. We got Nate Diaz back, and who is he fighting?
Dustin Poirier.
Of some of the other announcements, what are some of the other fights that were announced that you think that you're like super excited for?
I'm excited anytime Justin Gaethje fights. He's fighting James Vick. Also interested to see...
I'm going to jump in here and say that Tyron Woodley...
Darren Till. That is a great fight.
That's going to be a crazy fight. And then...
Israel Adesanya versus Derek Brunson. I'm really excited for that one.
Listen, every time I see Israel, I think Anderson Silva. He's like the next Anderson Silva. I don't know why I think that, but he's just a super talented guy. We're going to definitely talk about that one.
Valentina.
And I was just going to say, Valentina Shevchenko versus Nico. For the flyweight title, that's going to be an interesting fight. I'm a little worried about Nico. We'll talk about that. But Valentina looked like she was ready. Like she was at fighting weight at the press conference.
Oh, for sure. She was ready to go down there, too.
I mean, she looked like she was definitely in phenomenal shape. I thought that was the best I'd ever seen her look at the press conference. So we're going to talk about that as well. So, let's jump into it. We're going to talk about the fact that we have a brand new champion. And, you know, when you were looking at this card and you're saying, there's going to be a new champion, you would have said TJ Dillashaw. No one was going to say...
Oh, Cody, I would say Cody Garbrandt if there was a new champion at all.
He's going to be Cody, right? No, you wouldn't have thought that Demetrius Johnson was going to lose his title.
Mm-mm.
Now, I'm going to give you my take on this. When I watched the fight, I went through and I scored it as I was going through. I gave round one to Demetrius. I gave round two to Demetrius. I gave round three to Demetrius. I gave round four
Henry Cejudo.
And then I gave round five to Demetrius. So I had it 4-1, but I thought two was super close. How did you score that fight?
I mean, virtually I had it identical to you. As far as those close rounds of 2, 4, and 5, I believe those are the close rounds.
Yes, there's 2, 4, and 5 is the one that those were questionable.
Scored for Cejudo. I mean, as far as what won him the round in the judges' eyes, I would say that they thought the takedowns won him the rounds. And when I saw that, I didn't see any damage that he inflicted on TJ.
That was my take on this one. I went back and I watched the fight. And I felt like people were, even the announcers, were super excited about the fact that, holy crap, someone actually had Demetrius Johnson on the ground.
Yeah.
And he's holding the position. I felt like it was more of the shock effect than actually Cejudo actually doing damage.
It reminded me a lot of the Alexander Gustafsson fight versus John Jones. And it seemed like the crowd was really into it because it was more of a fight than they expected. And that, and all the cheering and all the kind of the build up to the takedowns and when Gustafsson took him down and when Gustafsson landed these different shots, it was very similar to how Cejudo was when he was able to take them down. And I definitely think that the crowd played a role in the judges' view.
Yeah, because when you look at this, let's say like the second round, that's the round I gave to Demetrius Johnson. Most of the judges gave it to Cejudo. Total strikes, Demetrius Johnson 30, Cejudo 15. Significant strikes, 14 Demetrius Johnson, 10 Cejudo, but he has one takedown. Then you go to that round four, which was a very controversial one. This one was a much closer one, and this is the round I gave to Cejudo. But if you look at it, strikes, total strikes was 17 landed, 17 of 28 by Demetrius Johnson, 16 of 30 for Cejudo. But when you look at significant strikes landed, 9 of 20 was for Demetrius Johnson. Only 4 of 16 were landed. 4 significant strikes out of 16 were landed on Demetrius. So that means 4 shots in a 5-minute round, but he got one takedown.
But what did he do with the takedown? He had 2 minutes of control. And what I think happened in this round is that the crowd got so behind this, and on paper, you could have said 2-2 easily on this because the second round was pretty close.
Okay.
I thought that Demetrius obviously won 1-3, closer than that.
Yeah,
round
I thought
two.
1-3 was, I thought was easy, Demetrius Johnson. I think, and all the judges agreed on that one. It's the 2-4.
Yeah, the 2-4 was close. And they saw the control that Henry Cejudo had in round four, and that definitely weighed in the decision and in the fifth round, I think. And when he got that takedown, it was like he won that round in the judges' eyes, which I don't completely believe with because he didn't really maintain control of Demetrius.
Right, and I agree. I did give this round four to Cejudo, but you know, when you pointed out the great point about he had 2 minutes of control compared to barely a little over a minute of control in round two. I thought Demetrius definitely outstruck him, threw a lot more shots, and I thought he won like four minutes out of the five. But because Cejudo had him on the ground for a minute, it was like no one had seen that in such a long time that it was just like, oh, that's Cejudo's round. And I was surprised by that. When you move on to the last round, you look at this, and this is where it can be a little tetchy. I gave round five to Demetrius, but pretty much most of the judges all gave round five to Cejudo, where if you look at the stats, this is the round that's a lot closer. When you talk about they both landed about 19 strikes landed. Demetrius threw 33, landed 19. Cejudo threw 39, landed 19. Significant strikes. He definitely landed. Demetrius landed 13 of his 27. Cejudo landed 15 of 35. And then he had two major takedowns. But when you look at the takedowns, he only controlled for 42 minutes. I could see 42 how...
seconds. Yeah.
42 minutes would be some serious ground control. When you look at the numbers, you could say, okay, I give round five to Cejudo, if you just look at the numbers. And I think the numbers would say, okay, let's say he won a close round four and he wins round five. I still didn't think he won round two.
Yeah, if we were going to do this equally, then if Henry Cejudo run round two, then I'm going to say, if I use that same judging and perspective, then I can easily say DJ won round five. Like, if I'm using that same, if you're going to give Cejudo that close round of round two, then you can easily give DJ that close round of round five.
And see, this is where, and first of all, I'm not saying this was a ripoff, because this was a very close contested fight. I personally don't have a big, I'm like losing my mind over the fact that they gave Cejudo the win, but I truly thought, when I looked at it on my scorecard, I went back twice. I thought Demetrius won. You know, but my big thing is, when you're looking at Demetrius Johnson or any champion, I know this has not been the moniker for decades, but I think it should be the moniker. And that is, in order to take the title from the champ, you have to beat the champ, especially a champ who has been on a run like Demetrius Johnson. You look at those close rounds, and if it's close, I got to give it to Demetrius. And I didn't use that in my scoring, but the whole old rule of you have to clearly beat the champion to take the title, I think that definitely applies. How do you feel about that?
I definitely think so, too. I mean, when I was watching this fight, I kind of look at fights unobjectively. I understand the history behind it, but when I watch the fight, I try to watch it like I've never seen these fighters before, and they're just fighting, and I want to judge it based on the damage that they inflict and the control that they have. And when I was watching it, I was thinking, wow, you got to do more than that to beat him. You got to do more to beat... Henry has to do more to beat DJ than this. You gotta take it to him to really steal these rounds. And I don't think that any of these rounds are truly stolen in terms of winning them, aside from round four. I don't think that, and even that one was close.
That's what I mean. Round 1 and 3 was a clear win for Demetrius Johnson. Round 2, 4, and 5 were super close rounds. Is that enough to take someone's title? Especially Demetrius Johnson. And I know that's not the way it is. I'm just saying that I kind of feel like that's the way it should be.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the weird thing that I try to look at fights like. I like to judge them in pride style. And pride is an
old organization. My next statement I was going to bring up to you is, if this fight is in pride, who wins?
Easily, DJ.
Without question.
I mean, if you look at the first round, just look at the first round. And what was the big event that happened in the first round? Henry's foot was giving out and his whole knee was giving out. And it looked like he was in more pain than DJ was ever in the entire fight.
Oh, without question, yes.
Now that's damage right there. And that was damage caused directly by DJ hitting him with a calf slicer.
Yep.
And then the funny thing is, DJ actually hurt himself. He actually broke his foot on Henry Cejudo's checked leg, I think.
Right.
And if you see the photos of him after the fight, he has an elephant foot. He
tore his ACL.
He tore his LCL and LCS. He also
and broke his foot. Yes.
He broke his foot and for both of those things. I mean, those are two champions there. I'm not knocking them for anything, but if you just take the pure damage of them and how it affected the fight, I mean, there's a lot more damage that happened to Cejudo than it did to DJ if you're just looking at how it affected the fight in those rounds.
I agree. One thing I'm going to say, though, is when you look at Demetrius Johnson, I have more respect for him now than at any point in time. He was a class act losing. He could have lost his mind in that ring and been like, listen, I won. I don't care what anybody says. I outstruck him. He never had me in trouble. I clearly hurt him. He was strictly classy. He was absolutely classy. Even after the press conferences afterwards, where that's when a lot of guys, the corner gets in their ear. They start talking about things, and it's like, how do we jockey to get my immediate rematch? He was strictly class personified. He was just a quality guy. Did you listen to any of the interviews and things like that afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, he generally didn't. He gave all the credit to Cejudo. He thought he did a great job. He talks about what he did well and what Cejudo did well. Didn't complain of any injuries, didn't complain of anything that happened before or anything that happened within the fight. He just was a champion through and through. And he's a family man, he's a good, respectable guy. And the same goes for his Cejudo. He did a great job, and he gave credit to Demetrius Johnson. He said that he changed him for the better after that first fight.
He definitely improved. Man, did he... You know, I noticed his last fight when he went from this wrestler to this karate guy, which was kind of a weird change.
He had the Conor McGregor stance. Right?
Yeah, it was a weird change that he made, but you can tell he was not the same guy that fought the first time. That was the first time that him and Demetrius Johnson had actually fought, in my opinion. It wasn't the second fight. It was like the twin of him because they were not the same guys.
Yeah, and then looking forward, I definitely think and I definitely look forward to this trilogy happening.
Oh, the trilogy. I don't think the trilogy is going to happen as soon as everyone thinks, though. And it's strictly because of Demetrius. Demetrius has a broken foot. That's going to be some time. And if Demetrius needs to have surgery, that's going to be some time. And at the end of the fight, he talked about wanting to fight TJ Dillashaw. They shouldn't have that. I think it was a good fight, a good thing for him to call out the winner of Cody and TJ. Because it shows like, you know what? I'm willing to go up and wait, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to fight these guys. Because everyone wants to be Daniel Cormier now with the two titles. You mm-hmm. know, first it was, I want to be Conor McGregor, and I want to hold, I want to hold two titles. But now, you know, it's DC.
Yeah.
You know, he's currently holding both titles.
And he'll defend them.
And he will, and he's willing to defend them.
Yeah, but, I don't see that happening. I don't see that fight happening as well because there's unfinished business with these with this trilogy that I want to see, and the trilogy is going to hold off because DJ also has a kid.
I want Joseph Benavidez. Oh, yeah. That's the fight I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very close fight the first time, and Joseph Benavidez, he won by a third-round split decision. That was just two fights before this. Do you think Joseph deserves a title shot?
Well, that's tough because he just lost to Sergio Pettis.
I know.
But and I don't. That's the thing. That was a closer fight, too. And maybe they should run that one back as well if they're going to do something because it was a split decision and there was no clear winner in that.
You know what? If you had Joseph against Joseph Benavidez versus Sergio Pettis. I'm about to say Joseph. I mean, wrong Pettis there. And the winner got the next title shot. I think that's a good way to go. Or you just wait for the Demetrius Johnson fight. But that could be a long period of time.
Yeah, and it's up to DJ what he wants to do as well because he's kind of in this situation where he's in a Dominic Cruz situation where if he wants to come back, he'll be a top three guy and he can fight whoever he wants up at the top, or if he wants to take some time off because he is an 11-time champion, a record-breaking champion. He's been champion for 6 years now. Close to seven, right?
The only person ever held the title longer is Anderson Silva.
Yeah, that's a long time to become champion. If you want to relax, you earned it, man. Go take some time and do what you want to do. Enjoy your newborn that's coming soon, but it's up to him in terms of if he wants to jump right back in this title picture.
Is the flyweight division now better off having Henry Cejudo as champion or Demetrius Johnson? And the reason why I ask that question is the fact that it has been well talked about and documented how Demetrius Johnson just doesn't sell and how flyweights just don't sell. And I hate to bring, you know, race or region, where someone's from, but you look at Henry Cejudo as a Latino fighter who is also an Olympic gold medalist. The UFC should be able to promote that. That's the Mexican market, the Latin market, is a huge untapped market, in my opinion, for the UFC. This is a guy that you should definitely put your marketing dollars behind and build this guy. What's your thoughts?
I definitely think that, I mean, sadly, the division is better off with DJ not as a champion or at least having lost that belt because it rejuvenates this division. It inserts new fresh blood, and this fresh blood, as you were saying, has a lot of marketing potential. They have a huge opportunity with the Mexican market, and they've always been trying to get through that. And the craziest thing is the closest that they've been able to get through the Mexican market is with the Brazilian Fabricio Verdum as champion, not Cain Velasquez. But like I was saying, this gives them a great chance. It gives them a more up-in-the-air division than it was with DJ ruling as champion for such a long time. And that's all credit to DJ, but this is kind of better marketing-wise and competition-wise a little bit for the flyweight division.
Because you know what, though? When you look at the flyweight division, and I just brought it up for you here, there's still, even in my opinion, even though he has all the market, I mean, he has the potential to have a lot of marketability as far as that Latin market, Olympic gold medalist. Is there anyone out there other than Demetrius Johnson that can actually sell? You got now the number one contender, which would be Demetrius Johnson. Number two would be Sergio Pettis. Three is Joseph Benavidez. Four, Ray Borg. Is there any of these guys that can move the needle?
Sadly, no. I mean, the best marketer, best names out there are the top two already, Cejudo and Demetrius Johnson.
Yes. I mean, maybe Sergio Pettis.
Maybe, but I mean, he's still very young in his game, and I mean, it's tough. It's tougher to sell him than those top two, I would say.
Now, you know what, I wanted to, since we have it here, the rankings, the UFC, we're just on the UFC rankings. And Demetrius is no longer at the top. It's he dropped four spots. So now with DJ losing, it goes number one pound for pound. Remember I used to argue that DC should be one of the top three fighters pound for pound? DC, Daniel Cormier is number one. Conor McGregor is number two. Don't agree with that one. It's just the guy hasn't fought in 2 years.
Yeah.
TJ Dillashaw made a big jump up and moved up to number three. He moved up three spaces. Max Holloway is four. I don't know how much I'd agree with that one either. The reason why is with the injuries that he's had, it makes me kind of wonder. I'm a little concerned about him and his health. You got George St. Pierre and then Demetrius Johnson at number six now. So just giving you that pound for pound ranking. Where is that? Should I finish at the top 10 on out? You got number seven is Tyrone Woodley. Number eight is Khabib. Nine is Stipe. And Robert Whittaker is at number 10. So just wanted to put that up there.
I think that whole list will change in these coming months.
I think how do you see it changing?
The big match to watch out for is the Khabib-Conor match. And then the Max Holloway match with... And definitely Tyron Woodley. I think Tyron Woodley is extremely underrated here.
That will all change very soon. We'll be touching on that in a little bit. But for right now, we're actually going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about the main event on this card. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back. I'm here with Mr. Will, World Traveler, Bug Eater, and what else? MMA
enthusiast.
There you go. Okay, and so the first segment we talked about Demetrius Johnson and him and Henry Cejudo and the fact that Demetrius lost and what's next for the two of those guys. Now we're going to talk about that main event. And this was the same, in my opinion, the same fight, just over a lot faster. I felt like, other than the kicks, I thought Cody came in with the exact same game plan that I am tougher and I'm going to bulldoze over him and he can't stop me. And the same result happened where he got caught and he lost again. What was your take on that fight?
I got to agree with you. That was just a fast-forwarded version of the first fight. I mean, you saw the same success that they both have. Cody had some success, and they both rocked each other with, like, they traded shots at the same time, and they both kind of stumbled back. And that kind of shows how evenly matched they were.
I was just going to say, I apologize for cutting you off. Yes, they are super evenly matched. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Go ahead. I apologize.
But the thing that they're not super evenly matched is on fight IQ.
I agree.
And TJ is doing something fantastic. He's going to different camps. He's seeing different shots coming. He's seeing different training partners. He's seeing all these different things, and he's kind of expanding his mind. Whereas Cody came back into this fight with that same game plan. and he comes to swing and bang, and he doesn't have quite the chin that, or the movement and the head movement that he kind of relied on to become a champion in the first place, it kind of goes out the window when you're throwing shots and playing Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
I don't even know if, you know, if you go back and look at some of the other fights, I don't think he ever had the head movement.
Oh, I disagree. I mean, check out the Dominic Cruz fight. That was fantastic.
Interesting. I'll have to go back and look. But as I go back and I think about some of the other fights, I have often noticed, I've noticed this before, that when you, with Cody, when you engage, he engages back. And he wants to get into a firefight with you because he, I've always felt like my shots are faster and harder than your shots because he has speed for days. I can throw two shots to your one and I can hit you harder, where TJ took more of a, I feel like took a more strategic approach where he was going to throw very efficient shots that were, you know, instead of when they get into a firefight, he threw more, you know, shorter, you know what I mean? Like shots that weren't wide looping shots, shots up the middle, you know, jabs, things like that. Do you agree on that or no?
Now, if you watch the finishing sequence, TJ threw the three same shots that he knew he was going to beat Cody with, the right hand, because he watched Cody. Cody loves to throw hands, and honestly, I don't think that there's a faster fighter in terms of hand speed than Cody in the entire division, in the entire UFC.
I was just going to say, I'm not just saying the division. I'm saying in the UFC, there's no one that has more speed than him.
And when he throws those shots, he doesn't cover his head at all. He throws him like full body, full head movement, and he tries to plant his feet down to really knock you out. And now, he wants to knock him out even further.
I'm going
to
say something about Will. It's been a while since Will been in here. So he was actually doing the movement. And he actually hit the mic with his hands. Just to, if you're wondering if there's a little noise, that was Will knocking out the microphone there.
All right, now I'm on a new mic. I knocked the other one out. I got some power for days, okay? I'm like Cody with my rights. I just got no defense right now. So
what did you think? As you go through that fight, was there anything new, that anything that surprised you about this at all?
I thought Cody was doing great for the first 2 minutes, just like he did great for that first round of that first fight. It's where he got sucked into that firefight, and what TJ did a really good job with was, if you see him throw the right hands, he brings his hands right back up to his head and throws the right again and times it with Cody's punches.
Right.
And he did that three consecutive times until he knocked him out, or he knocked him down and made him fall to the fence and eat him a little bit and just finish him on the ground, just like the first fight.
Is there any debate that this was a good stoppage? Because I thought it was a quality stoppage. Cody was done. Because I did hear someone say that they thought it was a little early, and I know that Cody was kind of protesting a little bit at the end of the fight, but everyone else just said it was just Cody was done. What was your thoughts?
Now, here's where it gets a little iffy. In terms of me as a viewer, I kind of know that Cody's not going to come back from that. And Cody in himself kind of knows that too. And if you're Cody's family members, if you're Cody's friends and all that stuff, you kind of know he's not coming back from that. Now, Cody himself, samurai, it's like the samurai spirit. You kind of want to go out on your sword. You kind of want to go out with there, but that's not what the referees are there for, and that's not what this sport is about. It's about intelligently defending yourself, and Cody, regardless of all everything that you can say, he was not intelligently defending himself, and the fight should have been stopped.
And that's my take. I was just saying, at the end, there was no more intelligently defending himself. That's why I thought it was a quality stoppage.
He stumbled back on the stool. If you watch the tape afterwards, he stumbles back on the stool and he protests it while he has Bambi legs. You don't want to do that.
I love the concept of Bambi legs. So when you look at this, first off, what's next for the champ? No. Okay, yes, I'm going to go there. What's next for the champ, TJ Dillashaw?
I think that he has some unfinished business with three people in division. First of all, he's never fought Marlon Moraes before. Marlon Moraes is coming off some fantastic knockouts of Aljamain Sterling and Jimmy Rivera. And then you also have Rafael Assuncao. He's beaten him recently, but he still has kind of unfinished business with him because they're 1-1, and maybe he wants to beat him twice to get it really back. And the last last loss that he has to avenge is that Dominic Cruz fight.
I look at it as Dominic Cruz is next up. And when you watch the first fight between him and Dominic Cruz, I personally thought that Dominic Cruz won that fight and it was a right decision. But a lot of people do not agree with me. Who did you think won the first time they fought?
Oh, I would totally agree with you that Dominic Cruz fought or won that fight. However, TJ fought in a very similar emotional way that Cody fights him.
Yep, I would agree with you.
He stopped with the leg kicks, which were totally hurting Dominic Cruz. And he just tried to throw punches and try to really trade with him. And he kind of abandoned his game plan and was getting overly emotional, lunging in too much, falling for counters. And one half of the fight was completely different from the other. And that's how Dominic won.
Now, so if I was going to say, we definitely agree that Dominic Cruz is a fight that he must have. And then you even think of Sansao, huh?
I would give Marlon Moraes that before Assuncao. Assuncao has had his chance, but that is kind of on TJ to eventually get if he really wants to. I think that there's not that much of a competitive fight there. But if TJ wants that fight, it's kind of like, if he wants it, then he can have it if he's finished off those other two, because I don't see anybody too appealing to watch next.
Okay, so if you look at the current rankings, you would say, okay, TJ's champ. Cody is the number one contender. That's going to change. I think Dominic will be the new number one contender. Right now, he's number two. Rafael Sansao is number three. Marlon Morales is four. Jimmy Rivera is five. John Lineker is six. When's the last time where's John Lineker at in this mix right now? What do you think of him?
He's up there, but we just recently saw him lose against TJ Dillashaw himself, and right. he also fought a close fight with John Dodson.
I personally thought John Dodson beat him. Number seven is John Dodson.
I definitely think so too. And you know who John Dodson also beat? TJ Dillashaw. Yeah. He knocked him out right when they got out of the Ultimate Fighter. That was the first fight for the championship of Ultimate Fighter and for the big contract. John Dodson had him on Bambi legs before I've seen anybody else on Bambi legs.
Never saw that fight, by the way. Just being honest, never saw it.
Short fight. Dodson rocked him, followed up. TJ couldn't recover, and he did some backflips off the cage in celebration.
Aljamain Sterling's number eight. Pedro
Munhoz, who also fought on this card, is number nine.
And then Cody
Stammen's pretty good. He's also a Team Alpha Male fighter. I saw a few of his fights. He showed some good potential. I believe he just lost his last fight, though.
Is there anyone removing, let's say, Dominic Cruz, who, if I remember correctly, is dealing with an injury right now?
Yeah, he might be coming back soon, and he might actually fight Marlon Moraes for a number one contendership, but I'm not sure. But as far as somebody that is ready to go, I would say Marlon is a really good pick. But it really depends on what they want to do with the Henry Cejudo, Demetrius Johnson thing. I obviously don't think that's going to happen, that super fight, if you want to call it a super fight. So I would either give it to Dominic Cruz or Marlon Moraes.
Now, let's talk about what the announcers were talking about. Because I did not agree with Joe Rogan whatsoever or anyone when they said that TJ is now the greatest bantamweight champion of all time. No, he's not. I still give it to Dominic Cruz. He's in the picture. I got him number two, but I still say Dominic Cruz is still the greatest champion in that division.
I gotta agree with you because of the length of time as champion, the pedigree as champion, and who he's beat. And Dominic has a huge list of people that he's beat. Not to say that TJ Dillashaw doesn't. But when you look at their record against each other, Dominic Cruz literally beat TJ Dillashaw, and that loss has not been avenged at all. And the only person that Dominic has lost to in a long time is
Cody.
Cody. And Cody had a phenomenal performance that night. I don't think if you put that Cody that fought Dominic Cruz and you put them in and you eliminated all the motions, that Cody is hard to beat against TJ Dillashaw. Like, TJ Dillashaw is going to have a tough time with that Cody. But he gets the Cody that he gets, and that's just how it is.
And here's the reason why I'm going to tell you why Dominic Cruz is the greatest of all time in this division. And I don't know what they're talking about. Got Uriah Faber. He has even Ian McCall. He has, let's see.
Joseph Benavidez when he was great. Brian Bowles when he was great.
Yes, Joseph. Demetrius Johnson.
Scott Jorgensen was a monster back in the WEC days.
You know, when you look at the who's who, his pedigree of who he's fought has just been better. TJ doesn't have the resume. Even if TJ beat Dominic Cruz, I would still put Dominic Cruz as the greatest champion in that division. My opinion. What do you think?
That's a tough one for me because...
Well, I'm just saying because you're looking at... I discount when you get a fighter at the end of their career, there's a big difference between a fighter, Anderson Silva in his prime, and at the end of his career now. Just because if someone beat Anderson Silva next week, that's not really saying you beat the greatest of all time. You know what I mean? Dominic Cruz is on the tail end of his career. At Dominic Cruz at his best, he fought Uriah Faber at his best. He beat a young Demetrius Johnson. He beat Ian McCall when Ian McCall was a bad man. You know what I mean? He's beat guys when they were in their prime. If TJ got him now, it would be at the end of Dominic Cruz's time.
Now, I would say that if he beats Dominic Cruz in an extremely dominant fashion, then it's really close. But if he continues on this streak and beats 2 to 3 more contenders, like this Marlon Moraes guy, like this John Dodson guy who he needs to avenge the loss against, like maybe Rafael Sunsau,
then... Is that really a resume builder, though?
It's not about the resume in terms of... it's not about the resume. It's about the performance in this aspect.
Because I think he needs to... In order to pass Dominic, I think he needs longevity. Because of there's not the names in the division... not discounting what you're saying, but I'm just saying if he ran off 3, 4, 5 more title defenses, then we're talking.
Now, but this is what you also have to consider and why a lot of people consider Anderson Silva as one of the best of all time. Not just because of longevity, but in the way that he finishes and completes the task of opponents.
I agree.
Now, historically, Dominic Cruz has won many of his fights by decision. TJ Dillashaw is not a decision winner. He is a destroyer.
I do agree with you on that one. TJ Dillashaw, a very underrated destroyer on top of that. Does anyone really think about TJ Dillashaw as a heavy-handed fighter? I'm just saying the casual fan, the fan that is a... The MMA guy knows TJ Dillashaw, but the regular casual MMA fan barely thinks about TJ Dillashaw.
He's not a one-shot finisher, but he's a one-and-a-half-shot finisher.
A 1.25, you know what I mean? One and a quarter.
And if he's not finishing in those 1.5 shots, he's finishing you against the cage like a Chuck Liddell, like a Joanna Jędrzejczyk. He is just smashing head against the cage like he did Henan Burrell. And he came out of nowhere, and he's kind of been relatively a short-reign champion. He hasn't had too much time as a champion, and like he's had phenomenal performances, though. Like, so it's kind of, you look at the time, and you look at the weight class, and you look at what has been done in the weight class. He's finished a lot of guys, but he kind of came out of nowhere and catapulted himself to become a champion.
Yes, I agree. Now, when you look at Cody... With these two losses, first off, he never defended the title. Then he has two back-to-back losses. he, when you look at the fact that he got kind of pushed up to the title picture faster than he should have, and then he comes and he gets the title and then never defends it, where does this put him now?
Now, this brings me to an interesting point. Because this fight was fought under California Commission rules, California Commission has these recommendations for fighters that they recommend you be within 10% of your weight class the day of the fight. And because of that, they actually weigh the fighters and release it to the public for disclosure for everyone. Now, the interesting thing that I saw out of all of them things, there's two interesting things. The first interesting thing is that most of the fighters went way beyond the 10%.
Way beyond. What percentage? It was like pretty much most of the fighters.
Yeah,
like,
most of the fighters. I mean, even all the six main card, most of the six main cards were over the limit. And the highest limit was 16.3% of your total body weight they were gained. And that was from one of the undercard fighters. I don't have the records on me right now. But the second interesting thing that I found was that Cody Garbrandt on the fight night weighed 142 pounds.
Okay.
And that was only like 5 or 6% of his body weight from the previous day that he weighed in and kind of dehydrated himself and did the weight cut. And you know who else weighed 142 pounds? Mighty Mouse.
Oh, interesting.
Cody in the past, after he beat Dominic Cruz, was interested to fight TJ. And if he beat TJ, he said he wanted to go down and take that 125-pound strap.
Okay.
If he's cutting that little weight to make this bantamweight weight, which is 135.
I see where you're going with this.
Go back down to 125, rejuvenate your career, have a opportunity to get out of the division, which you kind of like bottlenecked yourself from the top ever again in if TJ's a champion.
You know, I agree with you because even let's say he goes on a four-fight winning streak. No title shot for him.
No.
He goes on a six-fight winning streak. No title shot for him.
No, he's in no man's land. He's in limbo, just like Joseph Benavidez in 125 division.
Right. It actually makes sense for him to go down and wait now. It really does. Because if he goes down and wait, he's an instant title contender.
Yep. Well, after this Demetrius Johnson, yes, and Henry Cejudo, things sort itself out.
Right. Once that sorts itself out, he's at the top of the list of anyone in that division.
And he's a draw.
A major draw, yes. And that division needs a draw.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good move. No one's brought that up, but I think that is a smart move to go down in weight and be a major draw there where he could get the title. And if you're talking about trying to set up another fight between him and TJ Dillashaw, have him win the title, have him defend the title a few times, then you could talk about champ versus champ. Maybe that's a little more attractive, a lot more money.
Hey, make a guess. How much did TJ weigh that fight? That fight that they had. Guess how much he weighed.
How much?
He weighed 150 to Cody's 142. 8 pounds more than him.
Interesting.
He was 10.7% of his body weight, so he was a little bit over the limit, but within the guidelines. But still, that much of a difference on fight night, that's a crazy amount that you're giving to somebody.
That's a lot. And in the fight world, if you're not a regular person who doesn't follow it, that's the weight difference makes a major difference in the fight. I mean, it's how much punishment you can absorb. It's how much power comes behind your shot. And so that is an important factor in you know, the outcome of a fight.
And it's very interesting because TJ has often challenged Mighty Mouse and they were going to be set up for a fight soon. That's a lot of weight for him to cut from 150 to 125. He would obviously cut down some muscle, but still, that's a lot.
I always thought it was a bad decision for him to cut that much weight. I think I was going to take Demetrius Johnson if they would have fought. I just think he would have drained himself too much. It's too dangerous of a fight. It's not going to happen now. That, you know, I don't see it happening whatsoever. Do you? I mean, there's that option is completely off the table now.
I think it's 3, 4, 5 fights down. So it's going to be another, you have to finish another crop of contenders before that fight is on the table anymore.
I just don't see it. Okay, so we're going to close out here. But when we come back, we're going to talk about, we're just going to kind of go over the rest of the card or a couple other things about the card. And then we're also going to talk about the UFC 25th anniversary press conference, where we had a lot of interesting brand new news and a lot of brand new fights being scheduled. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA. It's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
All right, we're back, and my man Will here, and I have been recapping UFC 227. In the first segment, we talked about Demetrius Johnson losing his title and his great streak ending, and how we have a brand new champion, and Henry Cejudo. And then we talked about the main event, TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt, and what happened there and what's next for those guys. Let's take a look a little bit more at some of the fights on this card here, Will. Was there any fights other than the two that you wanted to touch on?
Well, I've always been a big fan of Renato Moicano, and I've been watching Cub Swanson since his WEC days. I was really impressed with Renato, but I've always been impressed with him. And what really got him on my radar was when he almost beat number one contender Brian Ortega. He was beating him 2.5 rounds in, 2.8% of that.
Would you say he's done the best against Brian Ortega than anyone?
I mean, the weird thing about Brian Ortega is that he loses kind of all of his fights before he'll win them in the third round.
Yes.
And like a Clay Guida fight, he almost lost that fight until he knocked Clay Guida out. And that's the thing with him that I love watching him is he's a finisher through and through, and he'll never give up. And I thought they were pretty evenly matched in terms of stand-up, and Renato was getting the better of him. But when Renato made that mistake and tried to take him down, he latched onto that guillotine like no one has ever seen before.
Yeah. Now, what about, so when you go to this fight, was there anything that surprised you? First off, who did you think was going to win between him and Cub Swanson?
Oh, I totally believe that Moicano was going to win in the first place. I think that Cub is... I don't want to say it, but he's a gatekeeper.
You went with gatekeeper out the gate. I actually was taking Cub Swanson in this fight. And just for what you just mentioned, I felt like this was a crossroads fight for Cub, and Cub had to pull out a big win. I thought he knew that, and I thought Cub Swanson can't come off with two devastating losses, and so he was going to. I thought he was going to come out. He was coming off of, the loss to Brian Ortega. Then losing to Frankie Edgar, and now this fight is a 3-fight losing streak. It's weird to think of Cub Swanson as becoming a gatekeeper, but that's why I thought he would do well. It's because he couldn't afford a 3-fight losing streak, and that's what he's on now.
Yeah, it's tough because I've been watching him from his WC days. I watched him when he surprised people when he fought Micah Miller, if anyone remembers that name. And that's when he really like kind of etched himself up as one of the upper division talents. But if you look at his record, he has lost the best of the best. And that's not like, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just that the best of the best have literally proven themselves against him. And he is guarding the title. picture. Like, there's no one in that division that has guarded the title picture better than him, and I'm sorry if that's the word gatekeeper you want to say with it.
Yeah, it's kind of like you beat Cub Swanson and it gets you set up for a title shot.
Yeah, he's a great name, too.
Yes, he's that guy. I hate to say that because Cub is such...
He's a great guy.
He's a great guy. He's a great fighter. It's just he's missing that one gear to get him over the top. It's instead of it being him getting the title shots, he opens the door or the gate for someone else.
I'm sorry, Cub. I'm just... this is semantics, so you can call whatever you want, but that's a gate right there.
That is a gatekeeper. That's the straight definition of a gatekeeper. That's weird to call Cub. I never thought of Cub as that kind of a guy, but yeah, that kind of puts him in that situation.
And something that's crazy that I kind of watched on an embedded, he said that he bought $26,000 worth of tickets for his family and friends because he's in the LA area.
Okay. I'm going to go right back to what I've been saying for years.
I know what you're going to say.
Don't fight at home. Don't do it. It is a bad move. And the reason why it is because of this. When you fight, when you go home and fight, you have so many, you have, most fighters are creatures of habits. You got to be in, you have your routine. You have what you do on fight day. You know, going up to it. But when you're at home, you land in Los Angeles. I got to go see Mama, and Cousin Pookie wants some tickets, and this person wants tickets, and I want to get a picture with them, and you get totally taken out of your routine. Then you step in the octagon. You just bought 26 tickets, plus. Have all your friends showed up. Your good buddy Billy Bob, he bought 14 tickets. You know you got everybody in the stands, and they're wanting to see you fight, and they want to see you look good. And what do? When you have people in the stands and you want to look good, you press. You press. And you want to look spectacular. You don't just want to win. You want to look spectacular. And so you fight outside of your normal comfort zone. And when you press outside of your comfort zone, you make mistakes, which then ends up making you look like Fabricio Werdum, which, you know, against Stipe, one of the biggest mistakes ever. Same here.
And the funny thing is, Stipe almost made that same mistake. But it was so worth it when he won because I learned so much about Cleveland culture.
Ohio. I grew up in Ohio, and it is a big deal. But yeah, even Stipe almost made that big mistake. It's one of those things where don't go home. It's a bad decision. At least I think so.
I mean, that was literally the only fight that we've kind of covered together where the home fighter has actually won against Stipe and Alistair Overeem.
And we're talking, like, go back and look at some of the main events where the main guy, that's the one that has the most people there to see. It rarely turns out well for you. It's just not a good move. And, you know, and especially on the main card, it's just one of those things. Unless it's a big mismatch where the UFC really wants you to look good and be impressive, and so they kind of book you as a mismatch. Hence, what I want to talk about is our next fight. What's the next fight we want to talk about?
I guess we'll talk about Poliana Viana and JJ Aldrich.
Okay, and that's why I'm making that transition, because Poliana... I felt like the UFC was trying to set her up to be a star. First off, how the heck did this fight end up on the main card? Shouldn't have been there. No way, no how should this fight been on the main card. And it's not because it's, you know, there. This was her UFC debut?
No, she actually beat someone else that had never won before in her UFC debut of the previous fight.
Okay, so she's had two UFC fights in her career. She's had a very short career in general as far as MMA fighting. She has a stellar career outside of the outside of MMA. But it wasn't a main event of fight, but I think they were trying to promote and bring on, trying to build a star. She's very, I hate to say this, but she's very attractive. She has, you know, it's a way to kind of build her up. I thought they had a big lamb chop sitting there for the lion to eat, and the lamb chop bit the lion. What do you think?
I literally, when this fight turned on, they were doing the intros, and I didn't even know that this was going to be a main event. I turned to my girlfriend, and I said, oh, here's a crusher fight. They really want to set this girl up because she's good-looking and the other girl's kind of not. And my girlfriend agreed with me before the fight happened and she left. And after the fight, I said, well, I mean, the crusher kind of got crushed.
And I am the biggest women's MMA fan you'll find. But that's even, and I'm a big supporter of, I think the women traditionally always steal the show. I'm just a big fan of women's MMA. This fight should not have been on the main card. I just didn't think. And JJ Aldridge, she fought her butt off. I don't want to take anything from her because she really came to win. She didn't care. You know, no one told her that she was the pork chop and that she was supposed to get eaten by the lion. And she looked across there and she decided that she was going to be the lion tonight. And she really brought the fight to her. I thought she did a great job.
I think so, too. It's just anytime you have a fighter on either side, anytime you have a fighter who leaves their chin straight up and kind of punches with just the arms only, you put that fighter on the undercard, not the main card.
Yes, this Pollyanna, she was still developing. She still needs to develop a lot of skill.
Her ground game is great. I will say that. I saw very good glimpses, and you can see her true expertise because she has a lot of experience outside of MMA just through Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. But as far as stand-up, that is the thing that she needs to work on before she can get a really good shot again.
Yeah, so that's I mean, honestly, she was on the main card. I would have put her on the early prelims. I would have felt better with the other women's fight, which actually, Danielle Taylor versus, help me with the name, Will.
It's Wiley Zhang.
That was a fight that should have been on the main card. And I'm going to tell you this. I saw a star in that fight. I don't know if you watched the early prelims, but Wiley Zhang is a talented fighter. This woman will be a star in the UFC.
I'm sorry, my Chinese is a little rusty. It's actually Wei Li Zhang. If you want to.
I'm not even going to argue with Will because Will just got back from China. So I can't even argue with that. But no, this woman is super, super talented. Danielle Taylor is a very tough fighter. It was a good fight. That's the fight I thought should have been. If you're gonna put one of these two women's fights on the main card, that should have been the one that I thought should have been there.
Oh, for sure. You got a huge shot at either the Asian or American market.
Yes, I agree. Do you have anything to say about the opening card on the main card?
I mean, I got to say that first fight was actually really entertaining. Thiago Santos versus Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland is a crazy individual. He was talking throughout the fight. He was saying right after he got taken down, he was talking to his corner. He was talking to his opponent. He literally said, I got a plan.
He had a full on conversation while on his back.
It was hilarious.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny. What I enjoyed most about this fight was not the fight. It was listening to Dana talk about how he got selected. Dana said, this guy, he saw him in the Contender Series. All he did was talk and run his mouth. And Dana was like, never. I'm never letting this guy fight. And Thiago Santos, he needed an opponent. And they shopped around some guys and he wasn't able to get an opponent. And then Dana White said, all right, well, what about Big Mouth? And He called him up, and Big Mouth said, absolutely, let's do this.
That's not the only thing he said. He probably rambled on for a while.
He probably talked for 45 minutes, but he took the fight, and Dana said how much he loved him. The guy just, he fought his butt off. He lost, but that was a very fun, very competitive fight, and because of the, even though he lost his UFC debut, he's getting another fight. Dana said right out the gate, he's getting another fight.
Oh, totally. I mean, he was closer than Thiago Santos was to finishing the fight at any stage. He almost had an armbar in the first round, and he had some great stand-up techniques, and he just needs to work out a little bit on the defense. It was just, he has a lot of talent, though.
The guy, all right, all I got to say is this. The guy didn't have a camp. Give the guy a full camp. What would you have seen?
And you made him fight against Thiago Santos? That guy is no joke.
No one wants to fight Thiago Santos.
He has Thor's Mjolnir hammer on tattooed on his chest.
And it fits.
It totally fits. It's Brazilian.
Yes, it totally fits. I mean, he is a fighter that no one really wants to see. I kind of like to see that David Branch fight again, though.
Yeah, that's a barn burner anytime they fight.
I thought that would be that's the fight I would definitely like to see them. David Branch is the one that he caught him and stopped him in the first round, the fight before this one. I would like to see those two fight again at some point down the road.
Thiago Santos beat Anthony Smith, who is running through the division at light heavyweight. He just knocked out Shogun Hua, and Thiago Santos fights at middleweight. Anthony Smith basically moved up because he fought Thiago Santos and lost to him by knockout.
And when you look at Thiago, does it even seem like he belongs in this weight division?
No, he's a monster. He looks huge compared to Kevin Holland, and they're both really big middleweights.
He doesn't even look like a light. Like, he should be a heavyweight, it looks like.
Oh, definitely. He would dwarf DC.
Yes.
Not in terms of width, but you're talking about, like, vascularity, and you're talking about, we're talking about bodybuilding now.
Let's not talk about width when it comes to DC.
He's thick.
But, yes, he looks like a heavyweight to me.
Yep.
This guy, how old is he?
He's in his 30s, so he's got to get some real good fights in, and I really hope they give him that opportunity.
See, personally, I think he should go up in weight, strictly because of his age. When you look at, if you're a light heavyweight or a heavyweight, you can fight a lot longer. You're going to be, when you start getting past that 35, 36 age, that's not a good place to be as a middleweight. But as a light heavyweight, 36, you're just hitting your prime. Yeah. Yes.
You move up right to heavyweight. You'll be there for a while.
So now let's change. We've concluded talking about UFC 227, unless there's another fight or two you want to talk about.
We covered the great ones.
Let's talk about that UFC 25th anniversary press conference. They announced two big fights that's gonna break pay-per-view numbers big time. The first one they talked about was Nate Diaz is coming back. What's your thoughts?
Elaborate. I'm excited. I'm actually from Stockton, California, so I'm pretty excited for the fight. I think Nate Diaz and the Diaz brothers always come to fight, and I'm super excited to see them fight. While I may not agree with some of their antics, they are literally keeping it as real to them as they possibly can. They know they're going to be in a fight. They don't really care what happens, but they're not going to make any friends, and everyone's an enemy if no one's a friend.
My only problem with that decision is like his attitude. The minute they started playing the video footage, which we're going to talk about next, he just got up and left. It's like, it's the attitude that he has sometimes where it just happens all the time. So over and over again, I mean, that's what makes people love the Diazes, but it's also a bit of a turnoff in my opinion. I know the Diazes are so loved, but, and I know you're a Stockton boy. Your thoughts?
It's just hard because if you take that same attitude and that mentality away from Nick and Nate Diaz, they are no longer the same fighter and they're no longer the same individuals that are so polarizing and so interesting to watch.
I agree with you. That's what's selling for the Diazes. Who are you taking in this fight?
Oh, that's a tough one. But based off of kind of activity-wise, it's really hard to go against Dustin Poirier right now. He has been on a tear. He's been knocking guys out, and he's been at the top of the division the entire time. While Nate Diaz, I'm sure he's been doing triathlons. He's been boxing people up in the gym. He's been doing all these different things. But there's a difference between fighting and recreational fighting.
I think I take this as an easy payday. Dustin Poirier is going to win. Lamb to the slaughter. I think just activity, power, just a better fighter. I just got Dustin Poirier winning easy with this one.
As long as Dustin doesn't get sucked into the mind games of Nick Diaz.
That's the one thing that you can never count on is it's like the McGregor effect. If you can get him out of his mindset and get him into that gameplay, then that changes a lot of things.
And by that way, I don't think the Diazes are ever an easy fight because they're always game and you have to literally finish them, which is also hard to do.
Is there anyone that finishes fights better than Dustin, though?
Maybe Conor McGregor. Conor couldn't finish Nate.
Okay, since you brought up Conor, and I guess I did too, the last fight announced is Conor McGregor versus the Eagle. That is Khabib Nurmagomedov. Yes, I said the whole thing correctly.
Well done.
Thank you very much. So, Conor versus Khabib. First off, were you psyched to hear that?
I was waiting for it. I've been waiting for that
for a long time.
Ever since that bus attack, that's when you knew the fight was going to happen. That's when you knew for sure.
Oh, no. See, I went the other way. Once the bus attack happened, I'm like...
Oh, he's going to jail.
I thought he was going to go to jail. I truly thought he was going to go to jail. I thought...
This is America.
It is over.
This is America. That was New York.
Yes.
There's different rules.
You were right. You were right. I thought, man... I'm like, if Plexico Burris went to jail for shooting his own self in the leg... He got, what, 3 years in Leavenworth or 2 years in Leavenworth prison?
He got some hard time.
Yes. For accidentally shooting his own self in the leg.
At a bar, at a club.
Where he showed the bouncer, hey, I have my gun here for protection. No problem. Bring it on in. And then they're like, hey, we're going to move you upstairs to get you away from some of the crowd. Okay, let's go up these stairs. Oh, my gun fell out of my pants pocket and went down my pants. Let me go grab it. Bam, I shot myself in the leg. I'm in Leavenworth prison. But Connor throws a dolly through a bus window, cuts up a number of people. One guy has glass in his eye. He doesn't even get 30 seconds in jail.
No, he literally canceled three fights. He literally interceded and canceled three fights and kind of messed up an event a little bit. But the same rules don't apply.
It's because it's the luck of the Irish.
Yep, that's true.
You like that, didn't you?
Yep, that's the only reason right there.
yeah, because it just seems wrong. But that fight is happening. What is your take on who's going to win and how it's going to go?
This is tough for me because it's such a stylistic matchup, and there's a lot of the reasons why I started watching mixed martial arts in general, because I love to watch different styles. Now, on one hand, you have the classic striker who wants to keep rangy and at a distance. And on the other hand, you have a grinding wrestler that has a submission game that is on point. And they will meet in the octagon and they'll clash. And there's only two ways that this happens. And there's only two ways that this finishes out. Conor gets an early KO and he completely outclasses Khabib on the feet. Or the second option is Khabib mauls him, and I talk about maul like a bear, because he literally fights bears. He mauls him, and Conor won't look the same, and just like Khabib said, he'll accomplish his mission of he'll change his face.
All right, I'm going to jump in there real quick.
Go ahead.
The last time I was this confident, I said when they announced that Tyrone Woodley was going to be fighting Robbie Lawler, and I said it's going to be a blowout. And I don't know if you remember that, but I said Tyrone Woodley was going to crush Robbie Lawler. Well, I kind of feel the same way about this fight. This is just going to be a biblical beatdown. I know everybody loves Conor. I love Conor. But Khabib is going to beat him like he stole something. Khabib can take a shot.
Yes.
We know that.
He's got a big noggin.
Yes, he does. The problem is Conor is Conor his stand-up game far superior to Khabib? Absolutely. But there's no one. Conor couldn't handle takedown defense with Diaz. What happens when Khabib takes Conor down? It's Conor's never getting back up. I think about the one Johnson fight.
Michael Johnson.
Okay, that's just an annihilation. Second thing is, if that happens, what's Conor's biggest problem? He has two major problems in this fight. Number one, the ground game is not equal. It's a white belt versus...
No, that's not true.
You know what? I'm going to say it's a pink belt versus...
Oh. Closer. There's some colors there.
They're just not competitive there. Then, if Conor goes to the ground, and let's say there's a long, drawn-out beatdown like Johnson happened. The next big issue that always happens with Conor, and it starts midway the second round on, stamina.
Yep.
Khabib can beat you and beat you and beat you and never get tired. And if you look at Conor wrong from the second round on, Conor is sucking wind. Conor gives out a gas against Khabib. It's an annihilation. Am I off on this one?
You aren't off.
You said it so matter of fact.
It's just that the same way that you see Khabib's ground game and his wrestling and his cardio and his stamina, it hardly matters when Conor can hit you right in the chin straight down the pipe. And that's what makes it so interesting.
Now, that's where I feel like Conor's only shot is he's going to have to catch him. He's going to have to catch him like he did just fought.
Eddie Alvarez.
Coming in, you're going to have to catch him like that and take him out fast. If this fight lasts longer than a couple of minutes, it's bad for Conor. And it's crazy to say a couple of minutes as the window for Conor. And 4.5 rounds for Khabib. But that's kind of the way I see it. I just do not see a way. And I know there's a lot of people that's going to be very upset by me saying something bad about Conor because Conor is so loved. And I love Conor. But I just don't see a way that he can get past without being able to land a very powerful shot very early and take him that way.
I would say that if it's not over for Conor, and Conor, like, if Conor doesn't knock him out in those first two rounds, he has no shot.
None. Zero.
No shot.
Now, I'm going to say this. In the studio here, we have Mr. Will, but we also have Will's better half, and she popped in here. And I know even though there's not a mic around here, who are you taking, Conor or Khabib? She's thinking hard. She rubs her belly because she is expecting a little Joanna Jojacek. She's leaning toward Khabib, but I don't know if that her heart was really into that one. What do you think?
It's not, because she's seen what Conor has done to Eddie Alvarez. We watched that fight together. It was a beatdown.
But see, there is a fight where if I'm Conor, I watch that fight 450 times because that's the only time someone's actually cracked Khabib. And who hits harder?
Who hits harder?
Yes.
Yeah, that's tough to say. Who's more accurate is Conor easily. Who hits harder? That might be Khabib. It might very well be him.
Yeah. It's going to be...
He's a big guy. He trains with Luke Rockhold, Daniel Cormier, and Cain Velasquez. AKA is no joke.
It's without question. It feels like when you think about who's going to be more prepared, I feel like Khabib is.
He's been fighting.
Yes. I mean, everything checks to either Conor hits a home run or I just feel like it's an annihilation. I just do not see it as a competitive fight. And that's the only person that I say will blow Conor out. I have a lot of respect for Conor's game. It's just styles make fights, and this is a fight that I just don't see the style being on his side.
I'm not going to pick a winner. I can't.
Oh, so you say it's so close. You can't pick a winner. I have my lead pipe lock of the weekend. I'm definitely taking Khabib.
I wouldn't even bet you on this one. I would do push-ups for either one because I'm so psyched to see this fight. And I'm going to do the push-ups just before this fight to get all my energy out.
Okay, so you just brought up another side point that wasn't brought up on the air. So Will and I have made a couple of bets, and one of mine was not the smartest bet in the world. And I lost, and I had to do a big batch of push-ups, which was 150 push-ups, which I did. And then we decided to revisit again. Daniel, Will took Stipe, I took Daniel. He gave me 2-1 odds, and he ended up losing. Will had to do 500 push-ups. Will went on vacation for 6 months, came back, and I was like, I'm not going to have him do 500 push-ups when he comes back from vacation. But Mr. Will, April had Will on point. He had him walking around. He was training like Rocky in Southeast Asia, having a backpack on his back, running around. He came back in shape. He had lost a few pounds. And he knocked out his 500 push-ups. So I really am impressed on that one because I thought you should have took me up on letting you out of those push-ups. But he did all 500 of them. No way in the world I'd have done 500.
I lost a bet. I'm a man of my word. So I did it.
Now, I ended up doing, how many push-ups did I do?
You did 100 with me. 150, 100?
I thought I did. Did I do 100? Did I do 200 or how to do 100? I did some sympathy push-ups. I'm just going to be honest with you. Just because I just couldn't see my man going through and doing all these push-ups by himself. So with that, this concludes this episode of the GSMC MMA podcast. I'm your host, Tate. We got Will here. We got my girl April over there in the corner. And to all, have a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.